This is the Adventist World Radio, and you are listening to The Voice of Hope. For more information, please feel free to write to us. Our email address is bible@awr.org, or you could also call us on WhatsApp at +1 224 222 0777.
Welcome to WaveScan, the international DX program from Adventist World Radio. Researched and written in Indianapolis by Dr. Adrian Peterson, and in Los Angeles by Ray Robinson. And produced in the studios of WRMI Shortwave in Okeechobee, Florida. I'm Jeff White. This is edition NWS 790 for release on Sunday, April 14th, 2024. On WaveScan today, Tangier International Zone, Part 1. Our interview with Adrian Peterson, Part 2. And our Philippine DX report. A couple of times recently, broadcasting from Tangier in Morocco has been mentioned in other topics. A few weeks back in his item on radio broadcasting in Gibraltar, Ray Robinson noted that before Radio Gibraltar was set up in 1957, a one-hour daily program for Gibraltar had been broadcast by Pan American Radio via Radio Tangier, just across the strait. Also, in one of the items on Sweden, it was noted that Ebra Radio began by buying time on a station in Tangier. So Ray's been digging into just what exactly was the broadcasting situation in Tangier during the 1940s and 1950s, and it's turned out to be quite a fascinating story. Here he is now to tell us all about it.
Thanks, Jeff. The history of Morocco on the northwest coast of the continent of Africa is long and eventful, going back thousands of years. But for our purposes, we can note that during the 1800s, it had been ruled from Istanbul as part of the Ottoman Empire, although after the Napoleonic Wars, it became increasingly difficult to govern. The French and the Spanish were both strongly interested in the territory, which was nominally ruled by a sultan. But by 1900, it had become the scene of multiple local wars started by pretenders to the sultanate, by bankruptcy of the treasury, and by multiple tribal revolts. The French had conquered neighbouring Algeria in the 1840s and sensed an opportunity to expand their influence in the region. They used both diplomacy and military force and effectively took full control of Morocco in 1906. Tensions rose between France and Spain, however, and in 1912 a treaty was signed by both the French and Spanish heads of state which granted Spain a zone of influence in northern Morocco, which became known as the Spanish Protectorate of Morocco. The remainder of the country, including the important cities of Fez, Casablanca, Marrakech and Rabat, became the French Protectorate of Morocco. Both France and Spain wanted to control Tangier, a port city on the most northerly point of Morocco, which has the best harbour on the western end of the North African coast. But the United Kingdom wanted to neutralise the city to maintain its dominance of the Strait of Gibraltar. Tangier looks out across the strait to Tarifa in Spain, just 20 miles away, and has long been viewed as both the gateway to the Mediterranean and indeed to Africa as well. So it was agreed that Tangier would be granted special status, but the details of that status were not fully worked out until after World War I had started in 1914. And then, while the attentions of the leaders of Britain and France were focused elsewhere, Spain used the opportunity to delay implementation. Negotiations restarted after the war, and a new treaty was eventually signed by France, Spain, and the UK in 1923, making Tangier a neutral zone under joint administration. The zone went into effect on the 1st of June 1925. It had an area of 155 square miles centred on the city of Tangier, and it was to be entirely free of any military presence. It was also made into a tax haven with no tariffs on imported or exported goods or gold, no exchange controls, no income or revenue taxes, and unlimited freedom of establishment, meaning no restrictions on the ability to set up businesses. And for our purposes, we should note that there were no controls on radio broadcasting. No licensing was required. The zone had its own flag, defence force, police, and legislature. Several currencies were accepted, but the official one was the pound sterling. And Britain, France, and Spain each provided their own postal services in the zone. The first edition of the World Radio Handbook was published in 1947, and that lists just two radio stations in the French Protectorate, in Rabat and Casablanca. They both provided programming in French and Arabic, and operated transmitters on medium wave for coverage of the local city areas, and on short wave for the North African region. In the Spanish Protectorate, there's just one station listed in Tetuan, with 20 kilowatts on 6070 kHz shortwave. All programming was in Spanish. It's likely that these stations were first implemented in the 1930s and continued during and after World War II. In the Tangier International Zone, however, there's no known radio broadcasting activity prior to the war. On the 14th of June 1940, the same day that Paris fell to the Nazis, Spanish troops occupied Tangier, using the pretext that they were protecting the city from the risk of an Italian or German invasion. From then until 1945, Tangier effectively became part of the Spanish Protectorate. But after the war, Spain was forced to withdraw, and the International Zone was reinstated, with the United States joining the joint administration. After the war, two main radio stations were set up in Tangier with the goal of broadcasting unregulated programming into Spain. One was pro-Franco, the other was anti-Franco. The anti-Franco one came first. In the mid-1930s, Herbert Rutledge Southworth was a left-wing socialist journalist working at the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C. When the Spanish Civil War broke out in 1936, he began to review books on the conflict for the Washington Post. He was emotionally affected by the struggle between fascism and anti-fascism and wrote press articles and pamphlets with passion. He was devastated by the defeat of the Spanish Republic, although after the Civil War ended, he continued to work for the exiled former premier Juan Negrin. And then, shortly after the attack on Pearl Harbor, Herbert was recruited by the U.S. Office of War Information. In 1943, he was sent to Algeria to work for the Office of Psychological Warfare. Because of his knowledge of the Spanish situation, he was posted to Rabat in the French Protectorate of Morocco to direct Spanish-language broadcasts to Franco's Spain. At the end of the war, he decided not to use his demobilization air passage home, but to stay in Rabat. Knowing that there were no controls on broadcasting from Tangier, he bought a quantity of U.S. Army surplus radio equipment, with which he founded Radio Tangier International, Radio Tangier International. He broadcast with 10 kilowatts on 244 meters, 1230 kilohertz, and with 1 kilowatt on 6200 kilohertz shortwave, with programming in French, Spanish, Arabic, and English. His primary purpose was to expose what he saw as some of the lies perpetuated by the Franco administration in Spain. And this was taking quite a risk, because Tangier was surrounded by the Spanish protectorate in Morocco, where General Franco had a strong base of support. Indeed, it was from there that he'd launched his military coup against the Republican government in Madrid in 1936. To cover the operating expenses of the station, Southworth accepted commercials and sponsored religious programs, with one of the first being Bringing Christ to the Nations in French, Spanish and English on Sunday mornings. The other station was founded by Jacques Tremulay, a figure well known in European radio circles before the war. As early as 1925, he'd established Radio Toulouse, which became one of the strongest private stations in France up until the Second World War. In 1939, he'd also set up Radio Andorra. Toulouse, being in southern France, was in the area controlled by the Vichy government, and he was forced to carry official information and propaganda on behalf of the Vichy government over his radio station. When the Vichy government fell, Jacques Tremulay was accused of collaboration, and his property was confiscated. He fled first to Andorra and then on to Spain. He was tried in absentia and sentenced to death, although he was later acquitted on appeal. In Spain, he set up Radio Intercontinental Madrid, and then moved on to Tangier in 1947, where another of his stations appeared, Radio Africa, which broadcast in Spanish, French and Arabic, with 1 kilowatt on 7080 and 14280 kilohertz shortwave. Their programming was mainly music supported by commercials. So whereas Radio Tangier International was anti-Franco, Radio Africa was very much pro-Franco. Well, that's all I have time for this week. We'll continue the Tangier International Zone story in 2 weeks' time.
At this time, Voice of Hope Africa begins another broadcast, transmitting on 4965 kilohertz in the 60-meter band to Central and Southern Africa, and streaming worldwide at voiceofhope.com. The Voice of Hope World Radio Network is owned and operated by Strategic Communications Group, located in Simi Valley, California, under the direction of Reverend John D. Taylor, President. We invite you to listen this evening to Good News for All Peace-Loving People on The Voice of Hope, beaming to you with God's love from Lusaka, Zambia.
Just a quick update, if I may, about our Voice of Hope station in Zambia. You know, in that part of the world, they have two seasons, the rainy season and the dry season, each of which lasts about 6 months. But the most recent so-called rainy season, which has just ended in March, was this year unusually dry, with very little rain at all. The result of that is that water levels in all the rivers, and the Zambezi in particular, are very low, which is critical for the major hydroelectric power generating plant at the Kariba Dam. Zambia and Zimbabwe both rely on the output of that facility for a large part of their energy needs, but right now, and probably for the rest of this year, the turbines can only be run to produce a fraction of their normal output. So in consequence of this, the government electricity utility in Zambia, ZESCO, has implemented a system of rotating power outages called load shedding. Every electricity customer in the country has been assigned to one of four groups, A, B, C or D, and schedules have been published for each region as to when the respective groups will be without electricity. Essentially, power is shut off for about 8 hours every day. Early mornings to lunchtime 1 week, mid-mornings to late afternoon the next, and mid-afternoons to late night the next. And this is Africa, of course, so nothing is precise, but that's the general idea. At the Voice of Hope transmitter site in Farmland, southwest of Lusaka, we had no power in the evenings during the last week of March. During the first week of April, there was none in the mornings. As you can imagine, this plays havoc with transmission schedules. Now, while we do have a large Caterpillar genset, the diesel to run it is too expensive and not readily available, so we are reliant on grid power. As a result, we're having to be flexible with our broadcast schedule. For the past couple of years, we've been broadcasting during local evenings, 4 to 11pm Central African Time, which is 1400 to 1600 UTC on 9680 kHz and 1600 to 2100 UTC on 4965 kHz. Now, we're adding broadcast during local mornings, 6 to 11am Central African Time or 0400 to 0900 UTC on 9680 kHz, containing the same program content that would normally be aired from 6 to 11pm. So basically, if we have power in the mornings, we'll turn the transmitter on, assuming that we may not have power in the evening. Conversely, if we don't have power in the morning, then we're hopeful that we should be able to broadcast during the evening as normal. Occasionally, we may be able to broadcast during both the morning and the evening hours, and that'll be a bonus, but it probably won't happen very often. Of course, all this will vary from week to week, so listeners will need to be vigilant and flexible, just like us. The web stream will continue to run 24/7 as it always has done. Our transmissions are fed into an omnidirectional antenna and are primarily intended for listeners in Central and Southern Africa, but we use a 100 kilowatt transmitter and do frequently get reports of reception from India and Europe, so DXers may want to make a note. Once again, that's 1400 to 1600 on 9680 and 1600 to 2100 on 4965, now supplemented on a likely alternating basis by 0400 to 0900 on 9680. The schedule on our website has been updated to reflect this, and reception reports are always welcome to reports@voiceofhope.com. Back to you, Jeff.
Thanks, Ray. Next week, Ray Robinson will be presenting part two of the Zenith radio story. By the way, we want to greet all amateur radio operators around the world who are listening to us, as April 18th is World Amateur Radio Day. Last week, we had the first part of an interview, which I did with Wavescan Editor-in-Chief Adrian Peterson at his radio room in suburban Indianapolis, Indiana. Today, we continue that conversation. So this is where you prepare have prepared the weekly scripts for Wavescan for many years, then?
Yes. It contains the information that I saw beginning in Australia during World War II. At the time of the war, see, I was born in the era between the wars. You can't remember that back, far back, Jeff. But I was born in the era between World War II. During World War II, I was a volunteer monitor for the Voice of America. And I have a lot of their QSL cards from way back then. Then in Asia, we had the program Radio Monitors International, which is the precursor to Wavescan. Very similar style and outline of content of information, just a new title for the program as it is today.
When did Radio Monitors International start?
It was way back there, about in the late 1980s. I was in Pakistan, and I was advising the head office of the Seventh-day Adventist Church in Washington, D.C., about establishing a shortwave service, which, of course, is known today as Adventist World Radio, on the air in about 100, 120 languages. We have about 150 production studios in different countries around the world. But way back there, I began... when we lived in Colombo, Sri Lanka, the Sri Lanka Broadcasting Corporation understood that I had transferred from Pakistan into their country. They asked me to make a visit, and Victor Gunatilika, one of AWR and WRMI's good friends, and yes, a good friend to all the shortwave world, he had notified SLBC that I was now there. So they asked me to make a visit, and they suggested starting a DX program. So that's the way that began, and it has grown from that time onwards. That would have to be 85, 70, yeah, around about in the 1980s, somewhere in about then.
Now, so you are from Australia, but you went then from Australia to Pakistan to Sri Lanka to India? How does that work?
Your memory is tremendous. Yes, we did. We went to Pakistan in 1985. That's the correct figure there. And Afghanistan and Bangladesh were part of the territory that I was involved in. And so I visited Radio Afghanistan on many occasions. And in fact, I prepared some programming for broadcast over the shortwave service of Radio Afghanistan, and the same in Radio Nepal and a lot of the other Asian countries as well. But like you say, after 5 years in those three countries, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Bangladesh, we went to Andrews University, which is north of the Catholic University here, Notre Dame, in Indiana, just across the state line. So I spent a year there doing research and study. And I studied, did some research at the Catholic University, Notre Dame, and also another university in Illinois. And then when we went back to Asia, then we were appointed to Colombo, Sri Lanka, which included the Maldives Islands. So I went to the Maldives Islands many times, had programming on their station, and also I did some programming on their television station way back there at that time. That was a new venture for them. Sure. Then after 18 months there, then we were posted to India to the studio, which was producing programs to broadcast back to India in a dozen languages. And so Adventist World Radio was new, but I organized the studio activity there into the Asian unit of Adventist World Radio. It still is our largest production studio for Adventist World Radio. Usually the studios are on the in production with just one or two languages, but over there in Pune, that is a larger impact.
And then you left India.
Yes, Mrs. Gandhi was the new prime minister during that time. I had my photograph taken with her, which is quite interesting. She was a good soul, but she was murdered by some of her guards. I didn't do it, but I had to leave India, along with 3,000 foreign families, and we were one of the families. We didn't, being Australian and India as part of the British Empire as it was, we could go in and out without documents. But when her son became the new Prime Minister, he issued new regulations for foreigners. And so our organization, Adventist World Radio, asked me to come into the United States. They offered me Canada or the United States radio ministry and also pastoral ministry. And we chose the United States partly because of the weather circumstances. We lived in India where it was hot, Canada is cold. And secondly, our two children were studying at the Adventist University just above the state line in Michiana near Notre Dame. The Adventist University is just across the state line. So our two children were there, and by coming to Indiana, it was for my wife's benefit as well as mine, closer contact and communication with them.
And that was part two of our conversation with Adventist World Radio's Adrian Peterson, the founder of this program, WaveScan, and its predecessor, Radio Monitors International. We'll talk to Adrian again next week on the program. Right now, it's over to the Philippines. Here's Henry Umatay with his DX report.
Hello, everyone. To the shortwave listeners, wherever you are, welcome to the April 14th edition of the Philippine DX. This is report number 205. I'm Henry Umatay in Bacolod City, Negros Occidental Central, Philippines. Glad to be back and thank you for listening. This year is the 17th year anniversary of Philippine DX. This segment was first heard here in WaveScan on March 25, 2007. Thank you for sending your reception reports and for keeping in touch for the past 17 years. Thank you, Adventist World Radio and WaveScan, for the privilege. I would like to thank the following DX for sending the reception report most recently: Mr. Richard Lemke in Alberta, Canada, Mr. Marco Lasatin in San Fernando, Pampanga, here also in the Philippines. To all of you, thank you very much. Reception logs for March 2024, March 3, China Radio International on 15440 in Cantonese from Kunming Aning at 1028 SIU 555. March 3, Radio Taiwan International 11915. Indonesian from Pauchong at 1035 SIO 55. March 10, Transworld Radio KTWR 11965 in Indonesian from Mariso Guam at 1036 SIO 55. March 10, Radio Taiwan International on 12065 in Hakka from Pauchong at 1035 SIO 444. March 24, Adventist World Radio on 15500 Indonesian from Agat Guam at 1123 SIO444. March 24, China Radio International on 11955 in Filipino from Kunming Aning at 1145 SIO555. We have some reception information sent by our DXer friend Marco Lasatin from Pampanga Province here in the Philippines. He heard the following stations from his location: April 1, Adventist World Radio on 17620 in Lao from Turkmenistan at 1339 SIO 222. April 1, Adventist World Radio on 17605 in Vietnamese from Madagascar at 1343 SIO 333. April 4, Adventist World Radio on 17725 in Ordo from Osborne, Austria at 1405 SIO 232. And Adventist World Radio on 17570 in Sinhalese from Madagascar at 1407 SIO 444. Send us your comments, suggestions, reception logs, and information to PilipinasDX@gmail.com. That's PILIPINASDX for PilipinasDX@gmail.com. This has been Henry Umatay for WaveScan in Bacolod City, Negros Occidental Central, Philippines. Sa'yong mabuhay at maraming salamat po.
Music from Morocco ends Wavescan today. Thanks for listening to Wavescan, the international DX program from Adventist World Radio. Researched and written in Indianapolis by Adrian Peterson and in Los Angeles by Ray Robinson. Next week, our main feature is the Zenith Radio Corporation story, part two. We'll have part three of our interview with Adrian Peterson and our Bangladesh DX report. Wavescan is heard weekly on KSDA in Guam, AWR relays in various locations, WRMI in Florida, WWCR in Tennessee, Voice of Hope Africa in Zambia, and IIRS Italy. Send reception reports directly to the station you're listening to. Reports for KSDA and other AWR sites should go to qsl@awr.org. Other correspondence, not reception reports, can be sent to wavescan@yahoo.com. For those of you in Africa and beyond, Wavescan is currently heard on Voice of Hope Africa in Zambia at 1800 UTC Sundays on 4965 kHz. Their second transmitter, usually on 6065 kHz during the evenings, is currently down for maintenance, needing parts to be shipped from the USA. I'm Jeff White at WRMI Shortwave in Okeechobee, Florida. Till next week, wherever you're hearing us, good listening, everyone.
Adventist World Radio, and you are listening to The Voice of Hope. For more information, please feel free to write to us. Our email address is bible@awr.org, or you could also call us on WhatsApp at +1 224 222 0777.